ear, pace on your ear. Take your iPod, your iPad with your HD display. Connect them to the cloud so your data's up to date. With your tablet in the air, play some solid game. Log into Facebook, tag a photo you can share. Tweet your plans, and play some Angry Birds now. Come on, baby, tell me who's the nerd. Nerd up. Everybody say, grab your GPS and get up on your Segway. Nerd up. It's a way of the world. No matter where you are, you got a 4G signal.
It's time for the Nerd Up Podcast, and here's your pod hosts, Guilty Wilson. Nerd
Up. All right, welcome to another episode of the Nerd Up Podcast. This one is pieced together from several things going on. Isaac and I went to see a few movies, and we'll review those here. You're going to hear about The Box Trolls, Annabelle, The Equalizer, and we'll wrap it all up at the end of the podcast with a review of The Book of Life. In the middle, between the first set of reviews and the last closing reviews, you're going to hear an interview with author John Scalzi, author of a new book called Lock In. He's also done several others, been nominated for Hugo. I think he's actually won the Hugo. Well, he's got a bunch just great books out. He's got a series out called Old Man's War, but this latest book, it's one of those that you think at first is going to be another one of those zombie movies where some sort of disease wipes out a percentage of the population. Well, they don't really quite wipe them out. They're still alive inside their bodies. They can still think. But John Scalzi goes one step further. He finds a cure, or at least a way around this paralyzing disease. And it's a very nice sci-fi novel. And we'll be talking with John Scalzi on that and then close out with one final movie review. Should be a fun one. Stick around here on the Nerd Up Podcast. All right, it's time for the movie review section with Guilty and Isaac on the Nerd Up Podcast, and we just got back from one movie, but we have not reviewed a previous movie, and then I saw a movie without Isaac that needs to be reviewed as well, so there's three movies on this one, plus at the end, we'll throw on a little gaming info because Isaac got a new game that he's just dying to talk about, because actually I think that's pretty much all he has done except for going to the movie. You did eat it at some point in between, didn't you?
What?
While playing this new game? You did eat, right?
I almost ate my DS in frustration. I'm not even lying.
All right, we'll talk about that here in a little bit. In the meantime, let's start out with the movie Box Trolls. Animated, or rather, it's not animated like cartoon or CGI. It's animated with stop motion. Because they used a 3D printer to create these characters. But the Box Trolls, let me tell you, first of all, go see this movie. It is a really cool movie. I drug Isaac kicking and screaming to this. Okay, he wasn't really kicking and screaming, but he didn't want to go, really.
I almost pulled a Mike Tyson and bit his ear off.
But I eventually got him to go to this movie because I begged him, basically. I didn't want to go by myself. I hate going to movies by myself. So we got Isaac into this theater, and we sat down at our sodas and popcorn from the Eagle Theater, which, by the way, they've got the new Flavor Rush machine where you can put in, like, squirts of cherry, lime, or whatever.
Is that really what it's called, Flavor Rush?
I don't know what it's called. Each store has a different one, and I never pay attention. I just squirt the cherry into my Dr. Pepper, and I'm happy. But, yeah. And of course, the refills and popcorn and sodas. Love the Eagle Theater in Robinson, Illinois. One of these days, we're going to have to head up to Clinton, Illinois, and go to the Clintonia Eagle, just to say that we've been there. Because if it's as good as the one we have in Robinson, it's definitely a cool place. And yeah, if you're ever through town, or if you're ever driving I-70 through Illinois, just head south, go to Robinson, Illinois, and stop in at the Eagle Theater, because the people there are awesome. Free refills on popcorn and drinks, and free popcorn Thursdays. I mean, Thursday, you get a free refill, but you also get your popcorn free. You bring in your containers and stuff like that. I mean, these people are awesome. That's enough of that. Let's talk about movies. Box Trolls. Great animated feature. I walked out of there saying, wow, that was a great movie. And one of the things, I mean, they got Ben Kingsley as the main villain in the movie. He was the Mandarin from Iron Man 3, most people may know. And also had two guys from Shaun of the Dead. Brian, was it Frost, I think is his name. I lost that now, but Simon Pegg and him, you know, basically the two partners from Shaun of the Dead, they're in this as well, and they're pretty darn funny. The movie is just full of surprises. The animation, the stop motion animation is just really fun to watch, and the story behind the film is just phenomenal. First of all, let me give a summary of the film, and then we'll get Isaac's or what he thought about the movie. The summary is that this kid is raised by these box trolls who live underground under this town, and at night they come out and they scavenge and build stuff out of what they scavenge. And the bad guy, Ben Kingsley, tries to get the city leaders to promise him that if he gets rid of all the box trolls, because apparently there's a legend of a box troll kidnapping a baby and killing the baby's father. He says, if I get rid of him, you'll give me a white hat, which the white hat means you're one of the city leaders.
And you're allowed to eat and sample the cheese.
Yes, the cheese. The cheese is just, that's a whole inside bit of this movie that just makes it so much more cooler. Yeah, so you get to eat all the cheese. And the best thing about it, the guy that's wanting to eat the cheese, he's got a cheese allergy.
I don't even think he knows it.
No.
They don't know it. They just think, like, there's something wrong or something with him.
His henchmen, they know it because they don't want him eating the cheese. And then every time he does, they have to break out the leeches because of the swelling. It's just hilarious. So he decides to get rid of the box trolls. Well, there's a little twist to the plot in which the kid baby that was kidnapped. I won't spoil it. The baby that was kidnapped and the father, the legend, comes back into play. They talk about it throughout the movie, and you're like thinking something's up with that. And then by the time everything's revealed, you're like, oh, I knew that. But then it's not a, I knew that, gosh, what a bad movie. It's, I knew that. Man, this movie made me feel smarter. So it really is great moments. There's some great family type moments where they show how family is important, not just blood family, but, you know, the family that raised you. The box trolls. Because this kid, he's raised and he doesn't even realize he's not a box troll. My favorite part in the movie, though, before I turn it over to Isaac, this girl who's the daughter of one of the city leaders is telling him how to act normally. Because when you meet somebody, you shake hands and look into their eyes. And so he waves his hands in the air and he's staring them down. And it's just kind of creepy. She goes, ew, what are you doing? But anyway, that's one of my favorite moments. But it's a great movie. I highly recommend this. Families, all ages, anybody. And if you're one of those that does enjoy going to a movie by yourself, no matter what your age, you're going to enjoy the movie. What did you think, Isaac?
That was a good movie.
Oh, okay. Gee, that's a good insightful response.
All I really remember since we... What was it? Was it last week?
Yeah, it was last week.
Yeah, so all I really remember was that ending and how brutal it was.
Oh, yes. It's a bit brutal, but hey, it's...
It's brutal, but it's not, like, blood-filled, so, I mean, the kids will still enjoy it if they don't know what's going on.
At the very, very end, there's, like, it's kind of like, you know, Marvel does the post-credit scenes. There's, like, there's kind of a post-credit scene where the guys, they're pondering reality, and they say, I wonder if we're actually controlled by another being. You know, if every one of our moves, and as they do that, they fade between the actual photos of the guy. It's like stop motion there, or no, time-lapsed film, where they have the guys moving the models one piece at a time, and then it's like it shows them moving the puppets while they're talking about, well, maybe we're being moved by other people.
And so the one guy, and then he's like, see when I blinked right there? Someone probably just had to slowly close my eyelid and then open it again.
Yeah, and that's pretty clever, and it's a really nice thing to do to that movie, because not only that, but it showed the audience at the end that, wow, this was... Because when you're watching it, you get so lost in the art. The scenery is beautiful. The town is just well constructed. Some great design went into this. And you kind of get lost in that. And then when they, at the end, after like post-credit scene, you see that movement. And you're like, oh, yeah. What was your favorite other than the brutal ending? But I mean.
Any scene with, what's his name? Mr. Pickles?
Pickles, yeah.
Is that the small guy? With, like, the henchman that's actually more... With every scenario where there's always a henchman that's more evil than the villain himself. But, like, he never actually...
But the henchman, I'm pretty sure that was Mr. Pickles, the very, very short guy that had the kind of... He almost seemed like a box troll himself.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why whenever they were putting, like, a play on the stage, he was used as the box troll.
But, yeah, he almost even talked like the box trolls too. But yeah, he was a fun character. Yeah, the henchmen were fun characters all by them. Those guys could have their own movie. Kind of like the Penguins of Madagascar have their own series now. These guys could have their own. But yeah, that's a good movie. Definitely worth seeing. Definitely take your family because everybody will enjoy it. Kids of all ages, adults of all ages, and anyone in between. All right, that's the box trolls. Next, it is October.
Spooky, at least scary skeletons.
At the time of recording this, it's October, and that means all month long, every movie you're going to see on Sci-Fi is going to be a horror film. I think AMC does it as well.
Doesn't AMC do like the week-long marathon of like Halloween movies?
Yeah, I think so. Some channel did, but and then of course Walking Dead comes back on television. But the best part about it is the scary movies come back to the theaters during this month, and that's what I love about this month.
No, I think the best part was that Smash Brothers was released this month.
No, we'll talk about that later. Yeah, but Annabelle. The movie. It's the prequel to The Conjuring. And okay, first of all, I got to say this up front. I have to iterate it every time, so I'm reiterating that the doll originally, it's based on a true story. And the doll originally is a Raggedy Ann doll. But I'm guessing, and I was talking to Isaac about this earlier, I'm guessing because the Raggedy Ann company said, no, we do not want our doll to be scary. So they wouldn't let them use the likeness. So I'm guessing that's why, because they got a pretty creepy doll that I don't think anybody in their right mind would ever buy this doll.
Not even people that were in like the 60s?
The 60s, yeah.
And, like, the people in the 1960s were weird and bought creepy stuff all the time.
But nothing, that still wouldn't be, I would never. And I like creepy things. Well, no, you know what, I think about it, if they license
you don't
that.
You like creepy things.
If they license that as a doll that you can purchase, like, you know, yeah, I think I might buy that now, knowing that it's an Annabelle doll. So, knowing that, it's still based on the true story. Ed and Lorraine Warren, the people that investigated the Amityville Horror, and also the people that investigated, of course, the goings-on in the movie The Conjuring. Well, in The Conjuring, it starts out with the doll, these nurses getting this doll that creeps them out, and that introduces us to Ed and Lorraine Warren, who introduces us to another story. And so you're kind of like, well, what happened to Annabelle? Or why did Annabelle? Where did that come from? Well, that's what this does. It tells you where it came from, and it's pretty creepy. Pretty creepy beginning. But I will say this. I was kind of let down on a couple little technical aspects.
Go on.
And there's so silly aspects that I guess I was looking for something to pick on. But first of all, this took place in 1969, 1970, around that time period, because they were showing the Charles Manson murders and on the television, and that as a cult that was going through killing, and that was what was going on television. Now, that happened about 1969, I believe, when Sharon Tate was murdered by the Manson family. That's 1969. One of my technical issues is that whenever an emergency happened, they dialed 911. 911 was kind of experimental at that phase, and it was mainly, and I know this is the geek coming out of me, but mainly being used in the state of Alabama, not California, where this movie took place. And so they dialed 911. Well, yeah, like I think 78 was when it was first really used, maybe 74.
I thought it was 73.
And I think it's 74. What do you know?
Well, Mom told me that earlier.
Yeah, well, you know, she don't know. Anyway, but I think about 74 was really when it was more nationwide, but still it wasn't as prominent. So anyway, so there's that issue. They dial 911. I'm like, what? And so then the other issue is still it's a telephone issue. The phones, they have the RJ11 jacks that you plug into the phones. Those weren't around until 78, I think, in a more prominent fashion. Basically, those were in use whenever the phone companies switched and that everybody could, instead of a monopoly held by AT&T, several companies could use them. So they had these RJ11 plug-in jacks. Well, again, the movie took place in 69 and all these phones had these RJ11 jacks. And I'm like, no, but those little silly things didn't take me out of the movie. There was one moment for sure in the movie where I sat there and got so creeped out that my hair on my head stood up, and I'm like, holy crap. But the basis of this is how Annabelle started. It was another cult. They didn't say it was the Manson family cult, but it was one like that. But these were Satanists, and they were trying to get a soul, and they broke into, basically the girl ran away, and she came to her parents' house and killed them to try to, for some kind of ritual sacrifice.
You didn't actually see her kill them. You saw, well, actually I think it was implied that the boyfriend killed them.
Yeah.
And yep. You didn't see it. It was just kind of through the window.
Yeah, with the blood splattering up against the window all of a sudden.
I don't know how that scared me. That was probably just because of the sudden music, like, rain.
Same here. The music and then the blood splattering, sudden movement. Anyway, so she came back, and then she ran into the neighbor's house. These are the neighbors are the ones that had the Annabelle doll, or the doll, anyway. And so she ran, somehow they went to investigate because she thought she heard a scream. So the husband goes to investigate, and while he does, they make their way into the house. I don't know how they did that, but they did.
Yeah, like, I think they don't even have like a back door.
It no.
It's never implied. And the lady was right out there on the front porch the entire time.
Yeah. The guy got into the closet. So they try to kill the second family, the ones that have the doll. And the police come right in the nick of time. And they shoot the guy before he kills somebody. The woman is pregnant. She gets stabbed. And then the daughter that was in the cult, she runs in the other room, and that was the creepy part. She goes, I like your dolls. And then she had the Annabelle doll, and the daughter's name, by the way, was Annabelle. That's where they get the Annabelle name. And so as she dies, she writes in her own blood on the wall a symbol for their cult or some kind of conjuring symbol, and then her blood leaks into the eyeball of Annabelle, and thus Annabelle is possessed.
Yeah, and I think that's why they showed such a close-up of the blood dripping into the eyeball, is because the guy said that they had him scrub everything twice, but I don't think they scrubbed inside the doll's head.
Yeah, it's funny, because the man is a doctor, and he says, oh, yeah, they scrubbed everything twice. You could perform surgery in here. Well, you need to perform surgery on this creepy-looking doll and cut that eyeball out to get the blood. But anyway, so then they're haunted throughout. I will say there were lots of creep factor moments where there's lots of jump moments, but there's lots of parts where you're like, something just creeps you out. Like I said, my hair stood on end. I didn't jump, but there are moments when you see a demon and it's just like, ugh, and you just kind of shiver, or your hair stands on end, or whatever. A lot of those.
By the way, I just have to point out, this demon was way scarier than the Insidious demon.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, the Insidious demon was just Darth Maul, slightly different. This was a scaly, reptilian, weird, evil thing.
A demon. And, yeah, exactly. And this one, and it was always in darkness, and that's what made it a little more creepy. They were running away from this demon's... Basically, it caused all sorts of havoc, so they moved to another place. Well, the doll, they threw away before they moved, and when they moved, the doll mysteriously showed up in the boxes. At that point, I would have, again, not allowed that freaking doll in my house. Well, that's what, I would have thrown it out the window or something.
That's a horror cliche in, like, everything. Like, yeah. Something suddenly reappears, and it's like, nah, might as well keep it.
Yeah.
Nothing bad's gonna happen.
I think there's some rules of horror movies where this is, like, somebody should say, hey!
Like that one commercial where it's like, if you're in a horror movie, you're destined to make bad decisions.
That's true. And so, yeah, it's absolutely right. But, yeah, there were several moments where it's like, I would just throw it out. And if I were one of the persons in the theater that, you know, is active, I know you've been to the theaters before where someone is, there's always somebody that's loud or somebody that's talking back to the theater. I would have been, throw it away! But they didn't. It would have been a really short movie if they'd have done that. But yeah, throughout the movie, there's lots of scared, lots of jump, lots of creep moments. I thought it was pretty darn good. I enjoyed it. I love being scared like that, and it's rare for a movie to do that to me anymore. I mean, the jump moments, like, I mean, Friday the 13th was great at the jump, you know, all of a sudden something happening, the music get loud. I like those, but I'm so used to them now. It was mainly because of the creepy moments that kept me on the edge of the seat. Because
of the actual storyline and the ambience, yeah. Unlike a certain movie, Devil's Due.
Devil's Due. All right, well, what did you think of the movie?
And, well, at least it actually followed the storyline, unlike another movie, Devil's Due. It wasn't just focused on the scares, Devil's Due. Oh, man, I got a fit of the cops today. But, no, it was a really good movie, and I actually, hold on, what was it? I think in Insidious 2, there was only, like, one part that I actually covered my eyes,
uh-huh.
If I remember correctly, but this one...
you weren't even looking at the movie most
of the time. Well, no, not most of the time. I can stand most of the scenes because, like, I was curious the first time the demon showed up, and I'm like, oh, nope, not watching that again if that's, like... If there's even a possibility of that happening. And children! I hate children in horror movies. Children are terrifying... Like, without horror things. Like, they puke all over you. Ew. Babies are gross.
Yeah, and this one, they had the child demon, the teenage demon, and the demon. Yeah, I think I realized, is this why you grow your hair long, so when you go to horror movies, you can cover it up that fast?
I can still see through my hair.
Oh,
I cover my face.
Okay. Because I noticed you were covering your face as much as you could on a couple of those scenes.
That's because I was simultaneously face palming, and it's like you just don't do that. No, horror movies.
All in all, I would say definitely a good scare movie to take a date to and make her, you know, if you have one of those timid dates that, you know, get scared, well, she can cuddle up with you. But definitely it's one if you like to be scared and you're just saying, they don't do it for me anymore. This one might creep you out a little bit. Any further recommendations you got? Anything else you want to talk about? Annabelle?
No. I can just say it was way better than some other horror movies. Dolls do. Yeah.
All right. Now, real quick, I'll talk about a quick movie here, and then we'll get to Isaac's gaming moment. Equalizer with Denzel Washington and Chloe Grace Moretz and several other people. Really good movie. Fun movie. And when I went to see that, I'm like, I wonder if this has got anything to do with the old TV series where the old man would help people out. And yes, it does. It's a fun movie. It's an action movie with Denzel. Anything with Denzel is awesome, I think. I have never seen a bad Denzel Washington movie. If there is, I haven't seen it. So there, see? But anyway, he portrays this, seems like he's like a former military of some sort, maybe former spy. Definitely Black Ops was what he did. He made himself disappear, is working incognito. He doesn't want anybody to know what he did. And he's working at a hardware store. And all of a sudden, he has to be called into action. And if you watch the TV series, The Equalizer, he would get anonymous messages and say, my life is threatened, can you help? And he would go help these people in various situations. I understand now, by the way, there's going to be an Equalizer 2, which is good. But anyway, so Denzel, this shows kind of like how he started doing that. And in this one, it's like the people around him, the people he actually kind of cared for. He never had any close relationships because he did. He distanced himself from people and he just kind of lived a hermit's life. But when those people that he knew and he helped out were starting to have their lives threatened, he changed things. Like one of them was a prostitute that would come in to the diner he would sit in, and first she started getting beat up, and then he realized, you know, well, I'll try to help her out. And so he goes to her pimp, who happens to be like Russian mafia media type people, and he offers her money. And the cool thing about it, everything he does throughout his day is always timed. He always times himself, like how long it takes him to brush his teeth, how long it takes him to get from point A to point B, and stuff like that. So he's always got his timer going. You're like, what is going on with that? Well, when he goes to the Russian mafia and says, hey, I'll give you $9,800, nearly, and the guy goes, well, I don't need $10,000. He goes, no, $9,800. And he goes, she would make more money for me in a week. And so they will not let the girl be. So he goes to walk out of the door, and it's the weirdest moment. He goes to the door, and he opens and closes it like three or four times and just sits there. You know, it's like, what is he doing? It's like some kid with obsessive compulsive disorder making sure the door was closing or something. I don't know. And then he turns around and he looks around the room, and you can see it. It's kind of like the CSI moment where they zoom in on everything that could possibly have killed someone on CSI. Well, he zooms in on every single danger in the room or everything that can be used as a weapon in the room. And then he stops and then he just mumbles to himself, 16 seconds. And then all of a sudden, he commences to kill about like five or six Russian mafia guys. And then the last guy is like slowly dying. The head of the, he goes, you know, you didn't have to give your life away. I gave you $9,800. You could have just walked away with the money. And the guy was like breathing, and he's like, well, it's going to take you about this long to stop breathing. And then you're going to actually still be conscious for this many seconds, and then you'll die. And so that basically that's what happened. And so then he looks at his watch and he goes, okay, it took me 9 seconds to talk to him. His timer went off at something, and it basically took him 18 seconds rather than the 16 seconds. So it was like, it was just an interesting moment. But that's how he's so precision based on all of his movements. But anyway, so then it runs into the mafia are after him now. So that's where the movie goes. Lots of action, lots of fun. Denzel's awesome as usual. I would love to meet him and say, dude, you're awesome. And that's probably all I'd do. I'd be like that Chris Farley moment. Remember that movie you did? That was awesome. Now, he's one of my favorite actors. Equalizer, go see it. It's worth it. It's fun, and it's a great action movie. Now, we got to shift away from the movies. Isaac has been doing nothing but playing this silly game for the last few days from the day it was released. He got his copy of it. Now, I'm going to turn it over to him to tell you about this game and how boring it must be if he's playing it all that time. By the way, that was sarcasm. Go ahead, Isaac.
It's a really good game. You can get it. No, I'm just kidding, but still.
It's a good game.
Don't lower that level whenever I get really close to the microphone. Make that sound. It's Smash Brothers. It's been on the internet for a while because, you know, people have been posting, in quotes, leaks. Well, not leaks of demo copies. That was when Japan actually released their copy. But I mean, like, leaks as in rumor. Like, not really any of them have come true. No, this is a good game. I haven't unlocked all the characters yet. I plan on that.
Well, what is Smash Brothers? For some of, there may be a couple people out there that don't know.
It's basically an all-out arena between Nintendo characters and, with the most recent additions, some third-party characters like Mega Man and Sonic. It's a fighting game, but it's not like Street Fighter or Mortal Kombat where you have a health bar. It's based around percentages, in which when they get higher, that's when you get more knockback, and the higher percentage you are, the more likely you are to die. KO, as it says. With all the characters they have, you wouldn't expect them to have the creative moves that they have. See, they made Mega Man exactly how you would expect him. He has all his different, like, robot master powers as his moves. But then there's characters like the Duck Hunt dog, who I have not unlocked him yet, but he is a character.
Wow.
And one of his moves, I think it's his side special move, is from the shootout game on the NES, like the one with all the mafia thugs. And then the side move is just like one of those guys shooting the person next to them with their 8-bit pixely gun. It's such a good game.
So now what characters are in this game?
You mean like what franchises?
Yeah. Well, first of all, I mean, in the previous Smash Brothers, Super Smash Brothers Brawl, they had Pikachu from Pokemon. Then they had one where they had Lucario, and they had added him in that. Which one was that?
They added him in Brawl, the Wii version.
Okay, the Wii version. Okay. So now, this one, what have they done? What kind of characters? First of all, start with the Pokemon, because those are the ones I want to know about. Are there any Pokemon in this one?
Well, yes, there's always going to be Pokemon characters. What are you talking about? Pokemon's one of Nintendo's most successful franchises. They've got the usual Pikachu and Jigglypuff that they've had since the very beginning. Oh, yeah? However, this time, they also have, in Brawl, they had the Pokemon Trainer with Ivysaur, Squirtle, and Charizard.
Oh, that's right.
But now they've just got Charizard as his own character. And his final smash is his Mega Evolution from X and Y. Speaking of X and Y, they also have Greninja, who is the final evolution of the Water Starter in X and Y. And he's a Frog Ninja with a tongue scarf. I mean, what's not to like?
Nice, nice.
The items, you have Pokeballs and Master Balls. which can release their respective Pokemon, Master Balls being legendary only, and Pokeballs being lower chance of legendary, but more of like Pokemon you'd find in wild, basically.
Okay. What other? You said, you mentioned Mega Man and Sonic are in there?
Oh, yeah, but they're only, since they're third-party characters, they're the only characters from their franchise. But Mega Man is really good because his Final Smash, which is basically like the quote-unquote hyper combo in Street Fighter and stuff like that, his Final Smash is all of the Mega Man from, like, each separate game, like Mega Man Battle Network and Mega Man X or whatever. And it's all of them shooting their, like, lasers at the, whoever Mega Man gets in his laser.
And this is right now is only available for the 3DS, right?
Yeah, but it will be available for the Wii U in November or... No, not November, December.
Just in time for Christmas. All these hours you've been playing this game, I mean, seriously, it's almost nonstop that he's been playing this all weekend, that he got it Friday when they released it, and now this is Sunday that we're recording. It's been nonstop. I mean, you've really been dedicated to this. Why is it that exciting?
Because I need to get Duck Hunt Dog.
And how do you unlock that? You got to do number of battles or what?
Yeah, it's actually... in Brawl and Melee, there were specific, like... missions you had, but since this one's limited to the 3DS, and, you know, since the 3DS is a handheld, it doesn't really have the hardware capability to handle all of that, so it's just the amount of fights that you do to unlock them. However, there is, as soon as the Wii U version is released, there's going to be a special thing with the 3DS copy that you can, in the 3DS you can customize, well, and in the Wii U when it comes out, you can customize your characters and give them, like, different stats than they would normally have. Make them around speed, attack, defense, or all equalized.
So, will when they come out with the Wii U, will you be able to cross-platform? Would you be able to trade something over to the Wii U?
Well, not
the
trade, but, like, copy.
Copy, okay.
It's more like it. And nice. You would be able to battle with them. However, not only that, but I'm fairly certain what I've been reading is that you can use the 3DS as a controller on the Wii U version whenever it comes out.
Oh, wow. That'd be cool. I know you're dying to get back on it. He's got the 3DS in his hand, and it's on, and he's getting ready to try to get going on this game. But I got to ask you this. This game, I have never seen you play a game so intensely.
Except Pokemon when it first came out.
Yeah, except for releases of Pokemon. Oh, yeah, Deadpool. Okay, I'll give you that one because that was just a good entertainment all the way through. What is it that makes this game, besides unlocking the character, so exciting for you to be play that all the time?
The character that you have, the me, like, you know, your me that you would make in the Wii or the Wii U or 3DS, you can fight with them. And what I've been going for is getting different, like, hats and outfits for them. That's why I've been playing through the other versions, but I think the main reason I like this game is because it's not really like any other fighting game. Other fighting games, you wouldn't have a percentage in knockback. You'd have a health bar and whether or not you died, except Street Fighter. No, Mortal Kombat's the only one you actually die in. But...
You're talking about hats and costumes and stuff.
Yeah.
Is there anything that's specifically really cool that you think that you've got so far?
Oh, well, I've made characters from my favorite YouTube series, Tome. I've got characters from that as Miis with their respective looks. But that's why I've been going for hats, is because one of my main characters that I made, well, one of the main characters wears a hat, but I can't quite get the right hat to suit him that looks like it.
All right, well, we'll probably have another update on this Smash Brothers whenever the comes out for the Wii U, because I know we'll be getting that. I just have this funny feeling somehow it's going to magically appear in this house, either by...
Annabelle,
yeah, or just Isaac just begging, or Isaac saying, I got the money, I'm going to go buy this now. One of the ways it's going to end up in this house. All right, well, that's this segment of the podcast. Keep it right here. We got more stuff coming up here on your Nerd Up Podcast. And now for this segment, we've got an interview with John Scalzi, author extraordinaire. I'm telling you, I ran across this guy's book. The new book's called Lock In. I ran across his book, and I'm like, wow, that sounds like a really cool book. And then so I said, well, what's this author all about? And all of a sudden, I find out all these things about his past, well, the past books that he's written, and I'm like, holy cow, I need to be reading everything he's got. So, John Scalzi, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you very much. Good to be here.
Science fiction author, a former president of Science Fiction and Fantasy Writers of America.
Yep.
Best known for your Old Man's War series. I have heard about it, but I've never read that yet, but I'm fixing that. I'm fixing that, okay? I promise.
Okay.
I promise that. Let's see. Those were nominated for Hugo. You've got your blog, Whatever. Now, what do you do on your blog, Whatever?
I pretty much write about whatever I feel like writing about. The title is not a lie. And so sometimes I will write about writing, which is obviously a thing. Sometimes I'll write about politics. Sometimes I'll write about my pets. literally, it's whatever I feel like doing. Now, the thing was, before I was a science fiction fantasy writer, I was a columnist for a newspaper.
Oh,
so
okay.
Many years ago, I decided, well, you know, one day I might want to get back into that whole column writing thing. So I started writing on the blog, and that was actually 16 years ago.
Holy
and as it turns out, I haven't gotten a newspaper column again, but the blog has spawned 3 books, and one of them won a Hugo, so I really can't complain about that.
No, definitely not. What's the URL? Pimp yourself out on this one. What's your URL for that?
It's called whatever.scalzi.com, or go to Google, and it will be either the number 1 or number 2 reference, depending on what day you are visited.
I will definitely be looking that up as well. So let's see. Best Fan Writer Hugo Award in 2008, based predominantly on that blog.
Yep.
Wow, that's a feat right there. The 2013 Hugo Award for Best Novel for Red Shirts, which this is one of the things that intrigued me. After I read the synopsis of Red Shirts, I'm like, holy cow, I love the idea of Red Shirts. Those are the guys that die all the time. And that's
sure.
Like, this has got to be cool. So then I read that you named one of the characters, the chief medical officer, Hartnell.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a little nod to Doctor Who. So we're mutual fans here, I'm sure.
There's a lot of little Easter eggs in that book that are kind of fun for people to experience when they sort of catch up with them. And
yeah.
Certainly that's one.
Okay, so that was a really neat one. I found that out. I'm like, okay, you guys, we're bonded somewhere. So now I understand Red Shirts is being developed into a TV series for FX.
That is correct. We're going to do a mini series that's based on the novel. It is currently in the script writing stage. And when I was on tour this last month, I actually finally got to meet one of the screenwriters who was working on it, and we had a nice chat. And I think that's in pretty good hands, so I'm pleased about that.
Now, before we talk about Lock-In, you have another series that's being worked on book that's being worked on as a series?
Yeah, we have, the 3 of them, actually. The Old Man's War series mm-hmm. is being adapted for sci-fi,
oh, nice.
And that's currently in, again, in script writing stages. The FX for Red Shirts, which we just talked about, and we just agreed with Legendary TV to adapt Lock-In, which is the book that came out in August. We got 3 books being set up for adaptation on TV right now, which every once in a while I think about that fact, and I'm like, wow, karma has been really good to me. I have to make sure I don't walk in front of a bus.
Definitely so. So what do you do in your free time?
I write science fiction novels.
There you go. Okay. Well, yeah, let's talk about this book, Lock-In. It just got released. You said August. And now, again, right now it's kind of the wake of zombie apocalypse, everything, TV shows, movies, books, you know, Max Brooks. And it's kind of the realm to be in right now to be popular. Is that what you were thinking when you wrote this, or do you just have this really cool story and it turns out to be kind of closely related?
Well, the funny thing is that one of the things I was talking about with relations with Lock-In, it was to write a apocalyptic story that wasn't, which was that, yes, we are in the, you know, place where, you know, we have zombie stories, or we have viruses that have taken over the world and only 1% survives and they're all eating each other and all that sort of stuff. And what I thought would be interesting to do, quite honestly, is to do something where it's the same setup. There's a virus that has swept across the world. Hundreds of millions of people have died. About 50 million people worldwide have been locked into their bodies, which means that their brains are working, but there's no control over their bodies whatsoever.
Wow.
So that it's this horrible, horrifying situation. But rather than that signaling the apocalypse, we have decided that, no, we're actually going to go and defeat this thing, and we throw a whole bunch of money at it. And just like the Moonshot or the, you know, Manhattan Project, we technologically, you know, crawl our way out of that particular hole and survive. And not only survive, but in the, you know, kind of resulting phase, we actually create a world in which the people who are locked in have the ability to escape the Lock-In in some through technology, through Threeps, which are androids that they can drive around using their brains, and through the Agora, which is an online world that is set up specifically for them. And so instead of the apocalypse, what we have is the sort of new normal, where 20 years later, I mean, the first time a Threep walks around, everyone's, this is amazing. We're living in the future. This is incredible. There's a human that is paralyzed, but yet is now walking around with this machine body. And that, you know, so when that happens, it's amazing. 5 years later, it's like, oh, it's Ted. And so what happens when in that world where everybody has acclimated to that, the fact that 1 in 100 people is going to be walking around in an android body, what is that world like? And so you put a murder mystery in that, which is what we do with Lock-In, and you show the world and the people dealing with it through investigating that murder mystery.
Wow, that's some development right there. I can see why they want to put that on TV because,
sure.
I mean, first of all, that's what intrigued me is like, okay, everybody's got, you know, like, again, like zombie novels. You've got Stephen King's The Stand where it's a flu that knocks out the world or, you know, all those stories that go along that nature. You've taken it and just jumped, I mean, decades, well, I guess 25 years
yep.
into the future and said, hey, we fixed it. Here's what happens now. And,
right.
And I love that idea. I mean, that's, again, total creativity. I really, bravo to you, let me tell you. That, I can't wait to read this now.
Thanks.
How many books total do you have out?
21, of which about 10 or 11, I kind of lost track at the moment, are fiction and the rest are nonfiction books.
Okay, so, all right, I'll go with the fiction. We'll start with that. So that's 10 books I have to get read by real soon because I want to, this one's going to be my first one on my list though.
Sure.
So yeah, I guess you just locked up my Kindle for the next few months or my audiobook listening on the drive to work.
Oh, sure.
I know Lock-In is the newest one that's out there. I want to ask you, what's the synopsis behind the Old Man's War series?
The way that I kind of, the elevator pitch for it is Starship Troopers with 75-year-olds.
Okay. Okay.
So that instead of recruiting from, you know, 16 or 18-year-olds who are fresh out of high school, what happens is you go with 75-year-olds who have a lifetime of experience and are ready to take a deal that says the good news is, you know, you get to go out into space and you get to join the military. The bad news is in doing so, you will end up probably dead in 2 years. But on the other hand, the question is, would you rather be dead being old on Earth or being out in the universe fighting, you know, aliens? And so that's kind of the deal that people get. And our main character is John Perry, takes the deal. And Old Man's War really is from his point of view of that first year fighting bugs. And there's more to it than that, obviously, but that's the way
right.
that I pitch it to people. And so, you know, it came out in 2005, uh-huh. and we were really lucky with it. I mean, it got nominated for the best novel Hugo that year. I was also nominated for the Campbell Award. So basically, it made a big splash, and we've done five books so far. I'm currently writing the sixth in the series, which is great because when you're doing a TV series, it gives them a lot of material to work with.
Right. I understand you said five, but you've got some short stories that are based on this same series?
Oh, yeah. Well, what we did actually last year is that we made a novel that was chopped up into 13 episodes, and we released those episodes once a week online before we compiled them into novel form, partly because it was interesting for me to do and partly because Tor wanted to see how people would respond to not a serialized novel where you would say tune in next week,
right?
But very much like a TV model where you would have some episodes that would carry on a series long plot, but you'd also have a couple of standalone episodes as well. You would have your primary characters, but every once in a while you would get to step away and look at some secondary characters and just basically do something that you couldn't do before because electronic media had not developed to that point yet. Mm-hmm. So that was a really interesting experience for us and actually kind of fun to do for readers as well because, you know, you get so used to here's this big block of text, which is the novel. And what we were saying is, no, actually, let's chop it up a little bit, see how you respond to that. And the good news is that most people responded very well to that. They really enjoyed we had 13 episodes, which is, so that's basically like an HBO season,
yeah.
right? And so it worked out very, very well for us.
Nice.
We were very happy with it.
Whenever you do a series of books, I know that, you know, you get one character that's going to progress through the series and stuff, and you kind of grow attached to them. And out of all your books that you've created, I'm going to bring this to another part of the question too, but out of all the books, all the stories, do you have any one character that you're really, really fond of?
The one that I usually give for that answer is Zoe, who is Zoe Bouton Perry, who is a character in the Old Man's War series and is the heroine of the book Zoe's Tale. And the reason is the character is 16 years old and a girl. And I was never a 16-year-old girl. And getting the voice of that 16-year-old girl was the hardest thing that I had ever done. I mean, it was just really, really difficult. I mean, I thought I was, you know, writing a really good girl character. And I showed it to my wife and to some friends who are women. And they're like, yeah, you're completely blowing this. And so I had to go back and really get it, you know, work on it real hard to get it right. And because I did, and I spent so much time with that character, I really had to work at developing her in a way that I don't have to work to develop, you know, male protagonists.
Right.
I really grew attached to that particular character. And one of the things that I tell people is I've been nominated for Best Novel Hugo 4 times. And one of them was for Zoe's Tale. And I'm actually happiest about that particular nomination because that story rises or falls depending on whether that character works or doesn't. And so to have it be nominated, it says, you know, that people thought that it worked out very well. Now, I wasn't going to win that year. The people that I was nominated with that year were Charlie Strauss, Cory Doctorow, Neal Stephenson, and Neil Gaiman, right? So I was like, ah.
Tough competition.
Yeah, I'm okay not winning. But just the fact that it was nominated at all, you hear that thing of it's enough to be nominated. But in this particular case, it really was because I was like, that means that I got the character. So that's the one I think about the most.
Well, again, that's one of the series I'm going to have to be reading. And, man, you just totally – my library is going to be busy. My bookstore is going to be busy. We're going to be finding them. And like I said, you locked up my Kindle. We talked about your William Hartnell naming or nod in the naming in the Chief Medical Officer Hartnell. Do you do that often? Is that something that you do in all your books? Or how – because you said Red Shirts is full of Easter eggs. Do you do that in all your books or what? How does that work for you?
Well, one of the things is that I'm really terrible at naming characters. And so what I end up doing is I will look around the room and I will pick out names. And I give people an example of this, that the main character of Old Man's War is a guy named John Perry. And people go, well, is he named after you? And I'm like, no, he has the first name of the keyboardist and last name of the vocalist of the band Journey. And they're like, you're lying. That can't possibly be the case. And I was like, if you look in the book, the second person who's named has the first name of the lead singer and last name of the keyboardist of Journey. His name is Steve Kane. And if you go through the first chapter, you'll find a Valerie, a Smith, and a Sean. And all of those are names of our members of the band.
Oh, man.
And so I would literally just take names here and there. And there's actually in Old Man's War, there was names that I meant to replace because they were too obvious and I forgot. So there is a private Gaiman and a private McKean, you know, obviously for Neil Gaiman. And people come up to me and they're like, did you know that is the name of Neil Gaiman? I'm like, yeah, I'm aware of that. So I will occasionally name people after, you know, friends of mine. I will occasionally kill characters that are named after friends of mine. And they actually get really excited about it. I had a friend for Locke-in, he's like, you haven't killed me yet. And I'm really upset. And I was like, all right, fine. I'll kill you in this book. And I did. I killed him in one of the chapters. I dropped a building on him. So, and he was very happy about that. So, you know, it's always nice when your friends are really excited that you've murdered them.
That you murdered them. Well, let me tell you, the Guilty Wilson is an awesome name to use in a book. Just saying. I'm just saying.
These days, I have a random name generator, which I use a lot. That makes things a lot easier. The irony is, this is kind of a funny thing. Old Man's War got onto the Hugo ballot that year in 2006. But one of the reasons that it did was that Neil Gaiman had been nominated for an ANSI Boys. Oh, and he had been nominated and won 3 Hugos in the 3 years prior to that. And so he declined the nomination and said, you know, let's give it to somebody else that it will be useful for. Mm-hmm. And so that's how I got onto the ballot. So ironically, Neil Gaiman has been a very good luck charm for me.
Yeah, I guess so. John Scalzi, science fiction writer. You also write some nonfiction. I want to mention that real quick. What kind of nonfiction do you do?
A little bit of everything. I have a book on astronomy. I have 2 books on film. I have 2 compilations of essays from the blog. I've written a book on writing, and I've written 2 books on people doing really stupid things. So a little bit of everything.
And stupid things intrigues me now. The new book came out just August, Lock-In, Virus, People Dying, and then John Scalzi steps in and finds a cure. And so that's what you got to do. You got to pick up this book and find out how he does it, because it looks like it's just going to be one big, huge sci-fi fun fest. I'm telling you. I mean, it grabbed me immediately. As soon as I saw that, I was like, wait a minute, this is my kind of thing. Again, thank you for joining us here on the podcast, John. It's been a pleasure, and I wish you all the luck. Well, it sounds like you don't need any for a while.
Still take it. Thank you.
Yeah, no more luck. You're too busy right now, but yeah, I guess we'll still give it to you. So, hey, I look forward to seeing what the TV series does to your books and stuff, so I'm going to keep in touch with you and find out what happens later. So, again, John Scalzi, go check out the book, Lock In. If not, check out the series Old Man's War or Red Shirts, that book. I want to read that one next after Lock In. That's my order. Thanks again for joining me. I'll talk to you again some other time.
Great. Thank you.
All right, well, we're back. Yeah, you kind of thought we were just going to do those movies, but we got one more movie we had to go see. Isaac and I went to go see The Book of Life, produced by Guillermo del Toro. And again, this is one of those movies that the artwork attracted me. I thought the artwork on this one was just unique looking, and I couldn't figure out why they were, I mean, they're almost like a couple of characters in the movie are like Salvador Dali paintings. You know, it's like really weird. And I thought, why would they do that in a movie?
Also, every character looks like a puppet.
Yeah, exactly. And you see that and you're like, why would they do that? Right at the beginning of the movie, they explain it. The story is told by a museum tour guide. Spoiler I'm not going to give. But anyway, the museum tour guide gives this story, and they tell it with wooden toys. And so that explains how the rest of the movie goes. And it really makes for a really neat story and a unique way to tell it. And again, the artwork on this is just beautiful. And I will highly recommend. We saw it in 3D. It was another one of those 3D movies. It's very rare that a 3D movie is like, okay, it has to be seen in 3D. Like Guardians of the Galaxy, when we went and saw it in 3D, it's like you saw so much more. But this one, we saw it in 3D. And again, it just, there's so much more depth. They actually made it for 3D. They didn't just do a movie and then say, oh, let's add a little couple extra effects and make it 3D. No, it's the whole surrounding world that you get engulfed in whenever you watch this. So, Book of Life, it's got all sorts of great stars. It's got some very cool, I almost want to call cameo stars maybe, but of course, you know, you got Channing Tatum, you got Zoe Saldana, which is, you know, hey, Gamora, speaking of Guardians of the Galaxy. Let's see, and I'm trying to think who.
You had Cheech as one of the background.
Yeah, Cheech Marin was one of the, that's one of the cameo characters I was talking about. Oh my gosh, and he was, of course, funny. Danny Trejo, you know, Machete. He was in this one too. Now, the characters, fun. The actors, fun. The storyline was really good, really well told story. It's a very almost a unique story, but the typical with any kind of a love and love lost type story where, you know, or people battling over a woman. It's got that same central focus, but the way this story was told, it brought out a whole new world. We'll talk more about the story here in a little bit. But one other final thing that I have to talk about on this is the soundtrack. Just like Guardians of the Galaxy soundtrack was like a driving force that was surprisingly a driving force in the movie, this one is too. You've got music from Biz Markie, Elvis, Radiohead, did Creep, and Mumford & Sons. And yeah, it's just a whole bunch of great songs. Yeah, you get Creep by Radiohead in this animated movie. You got What I Need by Biz Markie. Oh, yeah. It's just hilarious.
Was it Cheech?
I think Cheech was the one that sang that. Oh my gosh, yeah. I mean, it's just a great soundtrack. And it's not just like I said, Radiohead's Creep. It's like a mariachi version of Creep by Radiohead. Almost a mariachi version of You Got What I Need, the Biz Markie song. But it's still just the piano thing like Biz Markie did. And it's again, hilarious. But the I Will Wait by Mumford & Sons, it's towards the beginning of the movie. And almost a mariachi version. That was almost more pop than mariachi. But it's really nice, really nicely done. Now, all right, let me give you the little rundown of what the storyline is. It's basically these three kids that grow up, two boys and a girl, they grow up together, and then at one point, the girl is like a troublemaker, so the father, who is like the mayor of the city, he sends her off to a school in Spain, and these guys are in Mexico, which is the center of the universe, keep that in mind. One of them is kind of a passionate one, he's the musician, his dad wants him to be a bullfighter. The other one is the fighting guy, he becomes a major component in the army for the town. And anyway, what happens, they send her off, those guys live their lives, but they're constantly waiting for this woman to come back, or as a woman, and they've grown up, they've done things, you know, he's become the professional in the bullfighting ring, the other guy's become the hero in the army. The whole time, they've been waiting for the love of their life, and to see which one they marry. Now, here's where the little fun begins. What has happened is that, okay, you gotta know the mythos of the Day of the Dead on this a little bit. They explain it in the movie, so you don't have to know it before going in. One of them rules
the world where the remembered are. Whenever you die and you're remembered, you come back on the Day of the Dead and you can be with your family, so to speak. And those that are forgotten just fade away. So the rulers of those two realms, they make a bet. And they make a bet as to which boy will marry the girl. And to kind of make it a little bit better on each one, they kind of give each boy something on their side to help. Like one gets a medal from that basically protects him. He will never die. And the other one, what was it he got? I forgot.
They didn't give anything to the other one. The god.
She just gave him like encouraging words or something like that.
Yeah, the god of the unremembered, if you will, I guess, is what it would be.
He gave him the medal.
He gave the medal so he could cheat as well.
Yeah, that's what it was. And so he was the cheater in the wager. What happens is that he cheats. A snake bites this girl, but it turns out it's a magical snake. It has to be bitten twice, and so the guy thinks she's died. And so he goes back and says, I want to go back and see her in the land of the remembered. And so he gets bitten twice by the snake, and he actually dies. She comes back to life. He can't find her in the land of the remembered. And it's a big party down there, and they're waiting for the Day of the Dead. And then the battle for the town begins. And I'm telling you, it's just a whole great storyline. And you get lost in it completely. I totally got lost in the story and looking at all the visuals. It's a great movie. I really had a blast. I knew I wanted to go see it only because, again, it's like another one of those animated features that I'm in it for the artwork. I just want to look at this and look at the visually stunning. And they surprised me with the very nice story and the fun soundtrack and the fun dialogue. Just like a Lego movie. I thought it'd be fun to watch that one because I'm sure the animation was going to be fun to watch. But it turned out to be a really awesome movie, too. So again, these animated movies surprising me, and this one's got me.
Picking up where you left off about, like, right before you said that they went to battle for the town or whatever. That's when I remembered a voice actor we forgot, Ice Cube.
Oh,
the candle maker.
Ice Cube's in this, that's right. He plays the candle maker, which is like, it's really cool because he's got like this big long beard, and he's like the moderator between the two worlds, the remembered and forgotten.
Yeah, he has like all the candles, and if they're, it's like death and the hourglasses. If the candle is extinguished, that means that person's life is gone.
Mm-hmm.
If the candle's lit, then that person's still living.
And of course, Ice Cube just really totally made that fun. In fact, I think there were a couple lines, there were a couple lines that were in the movie Friday that he used in this, and I right off the top of my head, I can't remember, we saw the movie last night, but during the movie, I'm like, hey, wait a minute, I heard that. One of them was, it was a good day.
Whenever he was fighting the giant bull.
Right.
Like, or whenever he was fighting all the bulls from his family,
mm-hmm.
and they all clumped together. So Ice Cube, he said, that's a lot of bull.
Yeah, there were a lot of jokes they got by with in this one, too, that they kind of snuck in there. Again, this was a whole family movie. I mean, really, the adults, you're going to enjoy this, trust me. And like that line there, that's a lot of bull. He makes a wager with the ruler of the Forgotten to go back and marry this woman. What he does, he says, well, what is your greatest fear? And he goes, I got it. So he read his mind just as he's thinking it. And he thought he read it as he fears bullfighting. Well, no, he just doesn't want to kill the bulls. And a little animal-friendly moment there. So what he does is he takes the ghosts of all the bulls that his family's like long line of bullfighters, and they all attack at once, and like hundreds and hundreds of these bulls, skeleton bulls, by the way, they start to attack, and then they all form into one big, huge bull. That's when Ice Cube, that's a lot of bull. It's a really fun movie. Lots of great little jokes here and there. Music, I'm telling you, the soundtrack totally surprised me. The actors, the storyline, and of course the stunning visuals. Very well worth seeing. Take your family, go see this. You'll love it. That was The Book of Life. Perfect movie for the entire family. And let me tell you, people, go see it. It'll surprise you, and it's just fun to watch. I guess the next big movie, animated movie I'm looking forward to is that Big Hero 6 movie.
Oh yeah,
that one with Baymax and, well, Big Hero 6. That one ought to be fun.
I think they're just going to introduce Baymax in that one. I think, like, if they have a sequel is when they'll introduce the other characters.
I don't know, because you see the bus, a little side note on this movie. You see the bus running away, say, we were attacked, you know, that one dude. I'm pretty sure that's Fred Zilla, the guy that can change into a giant lizard.
Yeah, but my point is, like, I don't think they would show the trailers without at least, like, giving a hint that they have powers for a reason.
Well, yeah. Well, that's the TARDIS landing. That means we got to go, so that's enough of this segment. Talk to you next time.
Nerd Up Podcast. www.gilwilson.com.
If you need quality voice work for your radio commercials, audio for TV commercials, or maybe just for that message on hold for your business, you need to check out
www.gilwilson.com.
GILWILSON.com. www.gilwilson.com. Check it out. It's quirky. It's fun. It's innovative.